When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Blow the horn, let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champ.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's a someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
None of that play against. And make us ask quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Hear the tide, honey badger.
All right. Hello and welcome to a championship edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Yes, there are topics to be discussed. Landon's injury sucks. Giving up 46 to Florida rankles more than just a little bit. And we'll discuss each of that in turn. But let's take a minute and not overlook or discount the accomplishments that Alabama has achieved to date. There's certainly a lot to like. With this 2020 season, Alabama is 11-0 with 11 SEC wins. Folks, that is a forever record. That doesn't get broken. Alabama is once again SEC champs. And so you think 2020, when a lot of things have been different and unusual and unconventional, not just in football, but across the landscape. Wow. Rolling into December with Alabama as SEC champs just feels right, doesn't it? Feels normal. Alabama, again, remains the standard for all things college football in probably the most challenging football season ever. I don't have the all 22 from the 1890s. I know there was a stretch there where Harvard and Yale played one game seasons, and probably the travel with the horse and buggies was a pain in the rear. But I don't know. I think 2020 with the daily testing and the uncertainty, the week to week uncertainty, the all conference schedule, I think that probably rates just a smidge above in terms of challenging seasons. Alabama's back in the playoffs with a number one season. And this is a year, folks, when Alabama was done. Remember back in the spring when Cochran left, there were many so-called experts that said, this is it. Alabama's done. They can't recover from losing their strength and conditioning coach. How funny that sounds, especially in retrospect. This is a season when Alabama was done. The experts, they declared it. Alabama is done when Jalen Waddle goes down. And I don't want to diminish his loss or certainly his talent, but that doesn't look like Alabama's done. It looks like the body still has a pulse, and it's beating quite strongly, if you will. So, you know, as a fan base, we like our coach, and we mostly like our coaching staff. So, again, things to like, things to embrace. You know, sure, there's the thing with Pete Golding. I get it. But DC love, defensive coordinator love, is something that, well, it cuts both ways. You know, you could say at least we didn't, you know, we don't like Pete Golding. Maybe we don't like our defensive coordinator, but at least we didn't oust our head coach only to find out that the fan base is only in like, not in love with our defensive coordinator. So, you know, there is that as an alternative solution path. Not that anyone would actually ever be foolish enough to do that. So, yes, we're still going to do what we do on the podcast, but not before pausing and having a serenity now moment. A little woo-saw, deep cleansing breath, maybe a smoothie. There you go. Let's not be mad because we're Alabama fans, while almost everyone else is mad because they're not. Permission to enjoy granted. All right. Now, let's transition into the offense and let's talk about this game. Again, I still think there's a lot to like and there's a lot to dislike in this game. Alabama scored 52. Let's like that. Florida scored 46. Urgh, It's not like that, but let's seek to understand it a little bit. Not that I'm an expert. I just play one on a podcast, but I have some ideas for, for the defense topic as well. So let's jump into the offense. We've got 4, 5, 6 points here, kind of like we do. I'm not going to give you a big stat package necessarily like I will sometimes. And then I look at my notes and it's full of stats. You know, hats off, tip of the cap to the big three on offense. You know, Mac Jones over 400 yards, 5 touchdowns. Najee over 245 total yards, 5 touchdowns. Smitty, 15 catches, 184 yards, 2 touchdowns. I think he's your Heisman winner, by the way. The big three for this offense is phenomenal. And what they're able to do, the conflict, the contrast that they're able to have with opposing defenses is outstanding. And it puts Alabama on pace, averaging right at 50 points per game for the season. I saw the stat going into the game. Alabama was averaging 49.5 points, and in this game scores 52. So all that does is nestle the average that much closer to 50. I was hoping that we'd score 56 points so that it would come out just perfect, but it didn't. Nonetheless, outstanding offensive performance. 600 total. I'm doing a stat package and I said that I wouldn't. 605 total yards. I'm just in all of these numbers. Almost just let the numbers wash over you because there's so much goodness sort of layered in. 34 minutes time of possession, 33 first downs. The production across the big three and the production as a whole on offense is almost beyond expectation, especially in the context of this being an SEC championship game. I know it's Florida. I know it's their defense and all of that. But, I mean, folks, to put these kind of credentials, these kinds of stats up against Roast Beef Tech is an impressive Saturday morning. To put these up in prime time against the SEC East Conference champion in the SEC title game is it's almost beyond amazing. It's almost beyond what we should ever expect as Alabama fans. And I think we're entitled to have some pretty lofty expectations. But what we saw on Saturday from an offensive standpoint was absolutely phenomenal. A couple other points that we'll step through. Mechie, I think, had just the play of the year with his tackle on Terry Dean. Mechie had a pretty good day just across the board. He had 4 catches for 62, but I think I read somewhere where he knocked the taste out of that kid's mouth, and that sounds about right. He looked like he was unconscious as he was still trying to run and going down. He caught him almost like a hockey check, which I saw someone else comment how perfect that Mechie's from Canada because that looks like sort of cross ice, whatever terminology they would use in hockey. I do not have a hockey podcast, so I do not know. But definitely looked like he almost came under the arm, like a soft spot in like the rib cage or something. And that ball goes flying, knocked the ball out. Smitty was able to recover that and actually scored a touchdown on the next play. I do hate that. I'm going to wrap this back around to talk about Smitty. I'm back to Mac as well. I do hate that registered as an interception because it did look, it looked to me live on TV, and I've seen other people comment as well. Hey, that sort of validates what I think I saw, that it looked more like a reception and then a strip. And so I hate that, probably fumble's not the right word, but a strip. And I hate that was sort of cataloged as an interception. But, you know, it is what it is. As the play unfolded, it was an oh yes, an oh no, an oh yes. And what's interesting is we were going for the first down there, and at the end of the play, my 10-year-old daughter was asking, "What just happened?" And cutting to the chase, Daddy said, "Alabama got the first down we wanted," and it was funny how it happened. This is not exactly how you would script it up, but indeed that's exactly what happened. Jahlil Billingsley, I continue to be impressed with this individual. He had with this player. Just the athleticism that he brings to the tight end position, I think, is phenomenal. I probably have more on the negative side of the ledger to say about Jahlil today than I typically do, but I want to cushion every bit of that with what I so like about him. I would say one of my knocks is that he had 2 catches for 29 yards. One of those catches in the midst of being interfered with. And so it was a pass interference flag, but he continued sort of to catch the ball. Two catches for 29 yards. Definitely could have been used more in the passing game. But then you figure there were so many yards, so much production. Where do you find the extra plays? But there's always an opportunity to work in another route with Jaleel Billingsley because his athleticism is just incredible. Now, as soon as I say that, he's not built for end arounds. He is not built for end arounds. So let's not run, even though he's an athletic tight end. Maybe we could do some stuff with him running the ball and creative, because I've seen creative plays. Other teams do that. But just an almost like a jet sweep with the tight end. Nope. Don't buy that. We'll talk more about Billingsley later. Folks, that's called foreshadowing. Xavier Williams had a catch, and I'd have to go back and look. I don't know that he's had a lot of playing time on the season as a whole. I don't know that he's had another catch this season. Maybe he has. The fact that I don't remember means that it certainly hasn't been many. And the most interesting thing with me was not Xavier catching the ball so much, but that he was in ahead of Javon Baker, number five. And watching on TV is different than watching it live. We've talked about that before. I don't know that I saw number five, Javon, play, but Xavier, number three, did play. And so sometimes the numbers can look very close from a distance, not in a stand with your binoculars or a camera sort of zoom in. But it was clearly Xavier Williams who caught the pass. What we've been seeing is games where Javon Baker plays a whole lot. We've given him the mini game ball for playing 40 or 50 snaps, running routes, blocking, and not even getting a target. And so it's interesting to see Xavier play ahead of what appear to be ahead of Javon. I wonder if I do wonder this. I love Coach Saban, not knocking Coach Saban. He will play a tighter bench in sort of key critical games. Basketball coaches do all this all the time. That's the origin of the phrasing, right? A shorter bench. And I wonder if Saban went to sort of the third year player over the first year player in this type of contest and this type of atmosphere. I don't know that to be true. It's a speculation. I see Xavier make a catch, and it just, those questions sort of spring in my mind. I don't have answers for it, but it's definitely something we should watch. What happens in the two upcoming games? Do we see more X instead of Javon? And I don't want to project too far out into the postseason or spring. What happens? Player decisions. But it's one of those things. Arsenio Hall. It just makes you go hmm. And so I see that, and it makes me go hmm. Miller Forrestall absolutely needs to be a fan favorite. If you do not consciously realize that, hey, Miller Forrestall is one of my favorites on this team, then pause and assess that. The injuries, he has twice been carted off the field. Well, once carted off the field, the other walked off the field. He's gone to the locker room twice with injury during this season. He's missed games with injury, but he comes back and continues to play and continues to contribute. He had a couple of catches in this game, a couple of targets in this game, and it was very clear. Even the commentators made note that it was very clear that he has no wheels. I mean, he's got the hands, he can make a play, but he can't do anything with the ball. He's just so sort of laden with injury. But you know what's phenomenal? That he got a quarterback sneak in. It was an incredible play design. It looked like, why are we in a shotgun in a short yardage situation? And Max turning as if he's getting instruction from the sideline. And Miller is doing kind of what we typically do with the motions. And so it's not unusual to see him in motion. Nothing about that struck me. Even when he stopped behind the guard and spun and came back around, none of that looked unusual. It looked very, very normal. And then when he stepped under center, it was like, wait, it's slow motion. You come to consciousness of what's happening, and he takes the quarterback sneak there. And so I think that's phenomenal. Miller is from the Atlanta area. He was a high school quarterback before he got beat out by Sunshine over at Clemson and Trevor Lawrence. And that's when he moved originally to tight end. And so there's almost a symmetry, planned or unplanned, but incredible opportunity for him to actually get a snap at quarterback in the SEC championship game. That's probably a cool thing. He'll tell his grandkids about that. And so sort of all of that sort of balls together. that we need to recognize him as a fan favorite. And I've mentioned this before. Oh, I really hope Miller Forsall comes back next year with the whole COVID thing and this season not counting eligibility wise. I so hope that Miller Forsall comes back. If we could hand choose the players that we would want to come back, and we injected realism into that, players that are going to go in the first round of the draft or second round of the draft, okay, they're not coming back. You know, we can't say Devonta. Well, I mean, come on. But if we layered in realism and we started to project who are the players that we would most want to come back, would most have value to the team, Miller Forsall wouldn't be at the top of many people's lists, although he should be. His contribution, even the coaching staff talks about him being a glue guy and sort of a grease that helps the offense run because of his sort of mastery of it and his versatility within it. And even though we're not a tight end offense, what he can do is phenomenal. And an opportunity to have him back. We don't have another guy like him on the roster. We would miss him. Something would be off, and we wouldn't know what it was. And it very well could be missing a player like Miller. And so he would be a player that I would rank very high, that's in that realistic category to come back. And for all the praise on Miller, we're talking about Billingsley a minute ago. I want to go back and just reference Billingsley. Man, was he laying some blocks. He's going to get a lot more playing time in this offense, and he already has, but he is really showing himself as a blocker, especially in the running game, especially almost as a lead blocker. And I think maybe some of that lead is what sort of gave some misdirection on him running an end around. I get the idea. I get the theory of it. I think we need to be more, I think we need to reevaluate that wrinkle. I'll say that. Offensive line. I think I think the offensive line had a phenomenal night. It's easy to look at the two sacks that they gave up, but when you drop back to pass as many times as Alabama did, they're going to be back there coming to get you, waiting on you a couple of times, and they certainly did. I think as a whole, the offensive line, again, played very, very well. The fact that they were announced as one of the three candidates for the Joe Moore Award, you know, outstanding offensive line. That's such a teaser. Well, of course, is that a headline? Is that breaking news? We talk about that sometimes. What constitutes breaking news? Alabama being one of the finalists for that, to me, is not breaking news. It'll only be affirmation when they win it. Landon Dickerson going down, that hurt. That hurt. I really like the individual. I'm old enough to call him a kid. I really like the kid. I like his play. I like his physicality. I think he's better suited for a guard. I've long said that. But if he's not one of the best centers that we've had during Saban's era, then, you know, there's an opportunity to have that conversation as well. He's a leader. The fact that the TV, the cameras didn't catch it, but the commentators, someone on one of their spotters, that when Landon was injured, that Alex Leatherwood sort of broke out in tears. I don't know if that's true. But Leatherwood's sort of a hard dude, and for him to be sort of moved in that way, that speaks to their relationship. That speaks to the respect and the appreciation and the sense of loss that my brother in arms here is not going to be able to go with us the rest of the way. His value and then just wanting Landon to have that experience. There's a lot that went into that. And then as they were carting him off, all of the team running out there to, you know, embrace him or high five him or just an expression of appreciation. That is a phenomenal moment, and it speaks just volumes to Landon and who he is and his character and what he means to the team, not just the play, not just on the field, but off the field too. You can be a great guy and sort of be a jerk and not get that sort of love and appreciation from your teammates. And so again, Landon is a guy that we need to recognize, and it's easy to forget or overlook some of the guys that aren't the headliners. We talk about the big three on offense. Landon's not one of them, but he's one of these guys that we need to remember as sort of an all-timer because he is, and it really sucks that he went down with injury and will not be able to play through the remainder of the season. Hopefully two more games, two more wins. So what does that mean? So I'll tell you what I think it means, but here's the reality of it. I'm expressing an opinion that may or may not be right. You best believe at this point of the season, the coaches absolutely know what's going to happen. Now, we're outside of those circles. We're outside of that sort of that, not only the conversations, but all the practices. And so we don't know what's going to happen. We can speculate and probably come pretty darn close, but the coaches know. And so when I say it could be this or it could be that, don't confuse that with the coaches not having a plan. That's just from my living room, what I think may or may not happen. And so what that means is take this with a grain of salt. Watch practice reports. Watch practice reports. Watch any commentary that comes from the coaches that speak directly to practice reports. They might try a couple things, but they kind of know what they're going to do. And anything that comes out of those practice reports is going to be sort of the golden, not the peak golden, but the golden rule here. So it's going to be one of three players. It's going to be either Chris Owens, who stepped in Saturday, or Darian Dalcourt, who many think or many project as sort of the future at the center position. I think I put myself in that category. Or Emil Ekior, who was competing for the center spot as well, but he landed at right guard and has been the season starter at right guard. And the question there, part of the question is at what's the disruption factor? We have one position that's disrupted, right? Because Landon can't go. And so we need someone to step into that position. Do we disrupt only one position? And again, it's all in the interest of getting your best five out there so the line can play the best. And so disruptions can be a step forward and can be a step backwards in route to stepping forward. The trick is it's not August. And where you can take a couple of steps back because you have a runway to take the steps forward. We have two games left, only within just the next couple of weeks. And so how many steps back can we take and still expect to be able to take those steps forward, which is critical. That's critical in this type of, sort of time frame. And so we have one disruptive position because land is down. Potentially, we disrupt, two positions. If, for example, if Emil Ekior is the candidate, then we disrupt the right guard position. We need someone to play the right guard position. And then there's the potential for the disruption sort of at a third position. Chris Owens he's our sixth lineman. And so he's the sixth lineman at all positions. He's the next guy up. And so he stepped in and played tackle very, very well for Evan a couple of weeks ago. He stepped in for Landon, and for my money, didn't play as well. And so we could practice, you could sort of dust that off. But I think that's sort of the factor there. I think it's Chris Owens because of these reasons. But and you don't preserve him just so he can be the backup tackle if there's a need for a backup tackle. But you have to think about that. Who then is the backup tackle if Chris Owens is going to be the center the rest of the way? Those are the types of things you have to think about. And like I said, if you move Ekior over to center, then who's going to be that guard? And Chris Owens would be in the running for that. And then so you would have two positions and then, who's your sixth lineman in that situation? So there's a lot of questions. There's a lot of nuance. It'll be kind of interesting to see how it plays out. I do think the simplest straight line answer is Chris Owens and then in him having more time. He started multiple games at center in the 2019 season before Deontay Brown came back from injury, and that allowed Landon to move from guard to center. So I think it probably is Chris Owens. I just think there's some nuance there, and we just need to watch practice reports to see how that plays out. All right, so wrapping up offense, there's a lot more there than on sort of the line play or the line rotation than I anticipated, but nonetheless, good conversation. Mini game ball for offense. It's, for reasons already discussed, it's Miller Forrestall. Find place, find room in your favorite players on this team. Maybe it's an honorable mention list or a third team favorite for this squad or whatever. But find room to tip the cap to Miller Forrestall because he's a guy that deserves it. And we absolutely do hope and wish that he would come back for the 2021 season. And we have time to sort that out.
Hey, you all know I'm a serious Tide fan, but I'm also a whiskey guy. You know I like my brown waters. Apparently Facebook does too, and we're all better for it. Recently, up popped an ad for Legends drinkware glasses, and it was easily the coolest thing I'd seen in a while. But wow, now that I have these in my hands, I'm blown away. You know our Crimson Tide is rooted in tradition, class, and style. Somehow, the crew at Legends drinkware distilled each of these elements into their glasses. No detail is overlooked. Lead-free, crystal glass, hand-blown in America. Even the packaging is top shelf. And the gem-like logo? Well, it calls out to you. Roll Tide with every sip.
All right, let's flip the field and talk defense. And there's probably not an easy way to have this conversation. And I'll say things during this portion of the program that you'll agree with, and I'll say some things during this portion of the show that you won't, and that's okay, because it's an exchange of ideas, and there's plenty of forums for you to offer your feedback, and the Zoom calls, and the emails, and the Twitter machine to sort of engage in some back and forth, and I relish that. I welcome that. When we think about defense, I think there's four categories or four sort of topical areas that I'm going to use, that I'm going to explain, that for me sort of set the stage of what this defense is. To me, these four categories sort of work together to describe or define the defense. I'm not going to go art major on you, but if the Alabama defense in 2020 were a painting, it would be a mosaic. It's not a classical piece of art that we hope for, that we want. A traditional Alabama defense. We want that. But it's not an abstract either, right? That no one likes, no one wants, and it's frustrating even to look at, and we hate it. It's not that either. It's not a classic. It's not an abstract. It's something in the middle. And I think, you know, again, not an art, you know, history major here, but I think mosaic sort of lands, in that category. And that's what I think this defense is. Depending upon what you're looking at it, when you're looking at it, through what lens you're looking at it, you can have multiple perspectives. You can have multiple opinions. But when you step back and you allow yourself to step back and look at it as a whole, there are things that you may have a better appreciation for. You may not like the picture. You may not like it, but you understand, oh, that's what this is, because I'm seeing it sort of with a greater relief. If you will. And so I'm going to step through, I think, four topics or four categories that for me help paint the fullness of an image of this defense. And we can call this sour grapes. We can call this me being an idiot. We can call this a lot of different things. And again, let's have all of those conversations. I'm not trying to put lipstick on a 46-point pig. I just think I don't want to, I'm not throwing this baby out with the bathwater either. And so I think there's fairness on both sides of that aisle. So let's step through. Here are sort of the four categories or four points, mosaic points that I would have for this Alabama defense. And I'm going to focus through the lens of this game, of course, because that's only fair. So matchups. You know, there's an old sort of adage in boxing that say styles make fights. Think about, you know, boxers never want to fight, you know, a left-handed boxer. They dislike fighting left-handed boxers because everything's backwards. You know, the power punches that you're looking for are literally coming from, you know, the other side of the individual, right-handed versus left-handed. Think about left-handed quarterbacks, then the whole left tackle thing is sort of backwards. They may run their routes a little different. The direction that the quarterback's going to roll out, you know, might be different. I'm not mad at left-handers, but it's sort of an expression, right? You're going to take something away from your opponent and make them sort of play left-handed. And so all of that sort of, in my mind, goes into the category of matchups and styles, you know, make fights. Think about Alabama when they play a team like, you know, Georgia Southern, right? There's a style that they play, and they tin-horned us, right? Think about aerial attacks. They're very, very similar in that they're going to make you do things differently. They're going to make you defend them differently, which might not always be playing to your defensive strength. And so they're going to create matchups. They're going to create opportunities for themselves. You multiply that times two or three or eight when you attack that way, but with the talent that Florida has. if you question whether or not they have talent on offense, let's check back in May when the NFL draft rolls around, because I think they've got two, three offensive players that are going to go in the first couple of rounds. The Kadarius kid is phenomenal. We all know Kyle Pitts, and I think Kyle Trask is going to get some look. I like the Grimes kid too. I'm of the mind when you have one very talented receiver, he can elevate the rest of the talent. When you have two excellent wide receivers, it's more than just a 1+1. It's almost it's not a 1+1=2. It's a 1+1=3, because maybe they both draw double coverage, and that makes your third, fourth receiver that much more effective. And so Florida does that very, very well. When you've got the Pitts and the Kadarius, you know, that makes a Grimes that much better. Is he a number three receiver? I mean, yeah, I think he is. With the one and two that are both ones, then that almost pulls Grimes up to a three or to a two, because he's going to get more opportunities. He's going to get better looks. He's going to be matched up against maybe a lesser talented defensive back. And so that creates just incredible matchup problems. Think about, as you attempt to disagree with me, think about what Alabama does. You've heard the expression, we use the expression individually on the podcast, the coaching staff, in the media, you can't cover them all because there's so many of them. And so that creates matchup problems. Well, the other team's on scholarship too, and they have a quarterback that's going to finish in the top of the Heisman voting, and their receiver talent. I mean, I'm partial to Smitty and Najee and Mechie, but Kadarius and Pitts and Grimes are almost every bit as good, and their quarterback is almost every bit as good. And so everything that Alabama does to create matchup problems with our opponents, Florida is able to do that too. It's not that they try to do it, because everyone tries to do it, but they're able to do it. You know, take a Texas A&M in terms of offensive talent, their receiver, their running back, and their tight end, they're as talented as anyone. They have a quarterback that can't pull the trigger. Florida has the talent at those positions, maybe not running back, but the extra receivers, and they have a quarterback that can pull the trigger. Alabama has the talent at the skill positions and a quarterback that can pull the trigger. And so this is a styles make fights. This is a matchup situation. And this is where Florida, this assisted, it's not the answer. Like I said, 4 points, but this is one of the points that allowed Florida to have some success. Again, it's something that Alabama does. You know, if you want me to be flippant, I'll say this is something that the Kansas City Chiefs, they do every week as well. They create matchup problems. And, you know, by the way, they're playing NFL defenses every week, or at least most weeks, right? And so I think there's materiality to let's give the opponent some respect, their ability to create matchup problems, which can put the Alabama defense in a bind. Oh, we hate that being true, don't we? I do. We hate that being true. But it is true, and we can get better, we can improve, we can work on it, but it's true, and, you know, tip of the cap to Florida in that regard. Mistakes. So this is my point two. Mistakes. The Alabama defense is not blameless in this. This is not throw up your hands, it's a matchup problem, it's the modern-day game, it's all of these things, and so that excuses everything. I'm not saying that at all. Alabama made some mistakes. Some were quite costly. Josh Jobe's offsides took a turnover off the board and turned it into a touchdown. That may have ended the game. That may have created, especially if Alabama, I mean, you know, Florida got the 7. If Alabama were able to have driven the field and put 3 up, maybe a field goal, then that's a 10-point swing, you know, kind of on the back of that one play. And it's diabolical how it happened. There, it's near the goal line. It's a tight situation. You can look down. You can see the ball. Clearly, he was across the line of scrimmage. He reached out and put his hands on the wide receiver as if he were starting his coverage before the snap of the ball. You can't do that, and Josh knows that. And so it was almost diabolical how that happened. There were other mistakes. Jobe got beat on a pass. Malachi got beat. Surtain got beat on a ball that it looked like he potentially was going to intercept. He was in such perfect phase I don't know if he lost the ball in the lights, thought it was going to be overthrown, but he ended up getting beat and giving up a touchdown. Branch was covering Kyle Trask at one point, and I think he just jumped a little early, or he would have batted a ball down, maybe even picked it off. So there were multiple mistakes. Dylan Moses, we say a lot of talk about Dylan Moses, but Dylan Moses forced a fumble in a host of Alabama defenders. No one was able to come up with a ball. The Florida, and I believe it was Kadarius, Florida came up with that ball, and they were outnumbered, 5-1 in that scrum. And so those are types of mistakes. Give me a couple of those back, and I think it's a different game. Give me one of them back, and I'm going to take the Job off sides, because that takes definitely a 7 off the board, and it gives Alabama possession, especially at a time where Alabama was moving the ball really well. I think there are 4 or 5 possessions in a row where the Tide scored touchdowns, or at least scored with the ball. And so taking one away from them, taking a possession away from them and getting it back, I think would have had significant impact to sort of the outcome of the game. So matchups and mistakes, those are two of my 4 categories. 3, I'm not a scheme expert. I don't, I pretend to be some days. I'm not. I want to get better in that regard. But I think Alabama should have played a lot more dime. I was surprised. Now, it's hard to count DBs on TV versus live, but it looked like Alabama was playing a lot of nickel. A lot of plays with Brian Branch not in the game. And so when you see 14 running around, he's your cue. Hey, Alabama's in a dime. When you don't see him on the field, then it's a nickel, or it's at least a nickel. Then you start looking for Malachi. And against Florida, we're probably not going to do anything that's not, at least a nickel. I thought, for my money, no pun intended, Alabama should have played a lot more dime, almost like Mississippi State. Mississippi State, not a threat to run the ball. They're going to pass the ball around the yard. And Florida, very much, very similar. Not much of a threat to run the ball. They're going to throw the ball around the yard. And so if you defend one team that does that one way, why would you not defend other teams that way? And that's not to say that Alabama didn't play some dime. I just thought they could have played more. Having that, I thought, with Florida not able or willing, whichever, running the ball, I thought that gave Alabama almost an unfair advantage, that they could play dime for free, that they could put that 6th defensive back, double team 2 guys, almost for free, because who needs that extra linebacker against a team that's necessarily not going to run the ball? We'll take the extra coverage. And so the fact that the scheme, the plan, and don't get mad at Golding for that. It's an approved plan. Okay. We know this. And so I was very, very surprised at the schematic approach. And again, not an expert, not an X's and O's guy. I just watch enough to sort of get a sense for, interesting, a passing team. We're not playing dime. Almost exclusively. And again, we've seen us do it. We've seen Alabama do it, Mississippi State. And you could reason that they didn't have as good of a passing game. And so you would think against a known passing attack, we're going to play dime. Against a known passing attack that's better, why would you not play dime again? Especially when it worked so well. Do not have an answer for that question. Also, schematically, man, there's some short yardage situations where they were just – I understand we're begging them to run. Hey, but hey, let's do that between the 20s. When we get short yarded situations approaching the goal line and we just let a 240-pound quarterback run, I know he doesn't want to run, but you pat him on the shoulder and say, Trask, this moment's made for you. Help us win this game here running the ball. And they definitely had some success doing that. And I think Trask, I should have looked at the stats. He had at least 1, maybe 2 rushing touchdowns where he moved the ball, rushing the ball. Maybe if he didn't score, he allowed some misdirection and actually helped their running game. Other players run for scores. And so while we didn't have at the goal line situations, you can still play a dime, even at the goal line, and have some guys in the box. that was a little bit frustrating. So scheme would be sort of my 3rd category. And I think you got to look at the team through all of these lenses, not just one. That's skewed, but look through all of them combined. And my 4th one, I intentionally put this one 4th. There's still a lot to like on this defense. and you give up 46 to Florida, and you feel like there's nothing to like about this defense. This is a baby in bathwater situation. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. It is not heresy to say that there's still a lot to like on this defense. It's not heresy to say that this defense has improved significantly over the course of the season. Maybe we failed this exam, but that doesn't mean there's not talent and capability across this team. How many of us have, you know, failed an exam where we didn't study? How many of us have failed an exam or underperformed on an exam that we did prepare for and were surprised that we didn't do as well as we thought we were? Now, Dr. James, you probably never experienced this, so I'm talking to the rest of us. How many of us have, I thought I put in the effort. I thought I was prepared for that exam, for that test, for that quiz, and I underperformed. Man, I'd like to, I want to go back and do that one again. That's what this team is. That's what this team is. The Ole Miss game, we failed an exam we weren't prepared for. We failed an exam we didn't study for. The Florida game, look, I didn't like the outcome, okay? But circumstances are different. This team was more prepared. They just didn't execute. And we've talked about a lot of different reasons. That's the difference here. Failing an exam you didn't study for versus underperforming on an exam you did prepare for. That's the difference between these two games. And again, I don't think it's heresy to say that. I don't think that's lipstick and a pig. I just think there's some reality. I've talked through three other reasons why the score played out. I am saying, let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. That's the point I'm making here. There's still a lot to like. You want to talk improvement on this team. Will Anderson had Alabama had five sacks on the day. Will Anderson and Christian Harris both had two. Christian Harris was a player that we thought might not play in this game. We were optimistic, but he didn't play in the last game due to injury. And it was, you know, air quote, a game time decision. Will Anderson is a player who went through at least half the season without a sack. And I think he is the leader for all true freshmen in quarterback hurries. And he's Alabama's leader in sacks. And so when he sort of broke through and started having sacks, we wondered, did he crack the seal? It was only a couple of weeks ago we asked this question. Did he break the seal? Did he crack the seal? And he has put up multiple sacks. I would say multiple sack games, multiple sack games in that intervening time. And so it's so obvious that he's improving. Christian Harris as well. There were seven pass deflections on the day. Job had three. Sertan had two. I still say this is the best corner combo in the country. I still say that even after this game. Again, a lot to like on this team. The youth, think about the beginning of the season to now, the improvement that we've seen across the youth on this team. And I'm only going to list out, you know, four freshmen, but these guys played a lot, and they were four of the 11 together on the field, multiple times on Saturday. Malachi Moore, number 13 at the star. Brian Branch, number 14 at the money, the dimeback position. Will Anderson, 31 at the defensive end / outside linebacker / designated rusher position. And then Tim Smith, number 50 at the nose, who I wouldn't have said this early in the year. I wouldn't have believed it early in the year, but Tim Smith has proven that he's better than DJ Dale. And I think we're going to start to see his snaps and reps go up. I think he is a brutal force on the interior of the defensive line. And all of this play from these guys wasn't true earlier in the season. What they're doing at this point in the season, they were not doing earlier in the season. They weren't ready to do it. And think about other players. Jordan Battle's playing a lot better. Daniel Wright is playing significantly better. I think Job is playing with a confidence now that he didn't have earlier in the season. And so I think there's a lot to like. Christopher Allen has really come on the second half of the season. We gave him a mini game ball almost as a career achievement a couple of weeks ago because we had not been talking about him. So we had to almost have a feature like, hey, let's remember this dude's playing so well. And we haven't had a chance to or taken a chance to really talk about it. So there's I'm just saying there's a lot to like on this defense. We don't have to like Saturday. But this, let's dislike the result, not the individual, or individuals or the unit, and sort of in this regard. So that's sort of my take on defense. I weaved in a couple of stats, a couple of performance metrics, but I think we just need to look at this defense as a mosaic, not a classical piece of art, and damn, it's not an abstract piece of art either. It's still a work in process. I do think that because we have so many youngsters playing on the field, but I think they're playing, discount a couple of games, maybe a couple of plays. I think we're seeing improvement in this defense is playing well, and we're going to continue to see that as this season continues to unfold. This team, this defense is capable of supporting our offense to win a title. Don't throw out Alabama's chances. Don't do it. Mini game ball. Tim Smith, we've mentioned him, number 50 defensive line. I think we're going to see a lot more reps from him. He did have a fumble recovery. Amazing. He didn't log any tackles or assisted tackles. I had to go to a couple of different resources to see because it just seemed unreal for that to be true. And then he was instrumental, I think, in flushing the quarterback that led to the sack that ended the game. And so Tim Smith, I give him a lot of credit and mini game ball there. All right, let's see. I had a couple more notes on defense. Not asking you to like the height of wrote these down, so not asking you to like the whole of it, but appreciate that there are things to like. Allow for possibility that the talent to play well is there. We've seen it. We'll see it again. And then, you know, I'd made a note, Notre Dame, looking at you, and I think that's true. Let's talk about special teams and sort of this has been pent up. Yelling at my TV. My TV has a complex. What the hell is Jahlil Billingsley doing returning kicks? Do not understand that. And as if evidence to prove my point, Jahlil is credit. And I'm not mad at Jahlil. Don't hear me say that. But what is he doing returning kicks? And the whole sort of concept, they'll give it to you for free on the 25. And the stat pack almost incents someone to return it. Jahlil was credited with 63 yards of return yardage. And you think, gosh, 66 yards returns. Man, he must have really been effective. For my money, no. He fell short of the 25 almost every return. I think he had one where he made it just a little bit further. I get that we want him back there for his hands. I don't get that we have him back there for returns. If we would have had him fair catch every one of the plays, that would have made perfect sense. The fact that he was returning every one of the kicks did not make perfect sense. There reached a point in the game where even Florida was taking fair catches, and I think they have more sort of dynamic players fielding them. They were even fair catching, and I just don't understand that one. Again, I understand the hands. I do. I mean, we put Slade in a punt return position when he could barely hobble out there on his leg. So I get the hands, possess the ball. That makes sense. Returning it? Nope, don't see it. All right, Charlie Scott, 44-yard punt was flawless execution on demand. All season long, I've questioned, man, he kicks it short. Man, he kicks it short. And I've explained it, that he kicks it up. There's coverage. I get it. But I've wondered, in a situation where we need to pin the opponent back, do we go to someone else? And I, in that moment in the game, I questioned, do we bring in P. Ryan for this punt because of the circumstances? We didn't. And I understand that too. You don't want to bring a guy that hasn't punted all season to come in and punt in that situation. I understand it. But he was money. Charles Scott on that punt was money. It was a 44-yarder, tied for his third longest of the season, which is, I guess, a little bit surprising. But situational. It's the situational of that play that put Florida back on their 12, and it gave them an 88 yard field that they had to surmount in 16 seconds for an opportunity to sort of take the lead and win the game. It was only one play in the game that Alabama or that Florida ran with a chance to take the lead, and it was that last play. And it was only that last play because, again, they were pinned back with an 88-yard field. They had to take a big chunk Not a little chunk, not a 15-yarder, not something over here. They had to take a big chunk, which created the need for a deeper drop. It created the need for longer developing routes, and it created the opportunity for Alabama to sack. And all of that builds upon Charlie Scott's punt. Had he shanked it, then Florida could just run a 10-yard out. We can do that in a couple seconds. But they needed not a couple of 10-yard plays. They needed multiple 20 and 30-yard plays because they were 88 yards deep. And so to take the deeper drop creates a more focused target for the defenders. It creates a longer developed play. The defensive line, they're not just going to get it out after a couple of beats because the routes haven't developed, because you necessarily need the longer routes. And really give Charlie Scott a lot of credit for that punt. And again, it was a punt on demand. It was only his second punt of the game, and it was in a high critical moment in the game. And so I think he definitely made the sack possible. He made it possible to get Florida out of the game running only that one play where they had a chance with possession to take the lead in the game. So cannot say enough nice things about Charlie Scott in that moment. Smitty had a single punt return. It was 20 yards. I was hoping he'd have a punt return for a touchdown in this game to really give a Heisman moment, but he's had a couple lately. But he did have a 20-yard punt return, and it was not an immaterial kind of setting. It's not sort of as magical as what Charlie did, but Smitty's 20-yard punt return came on Florida's longest punt of the day, which was a 45-yard punt. And so he consumed almost half of that back. It's also the field position. That punt was fielded at the 10 and returned to the 30. And so it definitely gets you out of the shadow of the end zone. And in that ensuing possession, it was still multiple minutes, multiple plays, 70 yards. But Alabama scored on that next possession. And so there's a little bit, and this kind of gets lost in sort of the storyline of it too. If Alabama had taken the ball at the 10, you call plays differently from the 10 than you would at the 30, at the 15, at the 20, than you do at the 30. So you're definitely outside of the shadow of the end zone. You're approaching the middle of the field. You're going to play calls a little bit differently. And so I give Smitty a lot of kudos for his one punt return, but there was a criticalness to it, or at least an impactfulness to it. Will Reichert continues to be quite impressive, 1 for 1 on his field goal, 7 of 7 for his PATs, and he continues to hit line drives. There's no question when toe meets leather, that ball is sailing straight with an emphasis, with an urgency to get through those uprights, and that is something that you could just run loop the last, you know, couple of years of kickers, and I think you'd be able to pick out Reichert's kicks. There's an intentionality. That ball has an intention when it leaves his foot. Not a hope, not a wish, not a we'll see, but an intention that is going through the uprights, and I think that's something that we've lacked. And then one more sort of shout-out on special teams. Gosh, I need to go back and watch the film, but I think it was Josh Job. Early-ish in the game, there was an open field tackle. I want to say it was Josh Job who made the tackle. And so when you ask, why do you put your stars, and even the TV crew call it out, why do you put your stars on special teams? It's for plays like that. Had that been a freshman linebacker or an inexperienced freshman, redshirt freshman DB, you can't have the same level of certainty that they would have made the play, that they would have made the tackle. And so Josh Job, that was a nice play. All right. So when we think about next, what is next? The playoffs are next, and round one of the playoffs, and they're coming up January 1st. You know, we're going to do a Zoom call that morning for the All America crowd. We're going to do an interview with a Notre Dame site, probably release that the week coming up, leading up to the game. And that's going to be available to our All Conference crew as well as our All America crew. If you want to participate in these, it's not too late. We have already released more bonus podcasts this season than we did in the entirety of all last season. We're up near 35, 36 this season, and I think we did 29 all of last season, most of those coming in the off season. And so if we maintain that trajectory, there's still a lot of shows, you know, sort of bonus shows that we're going to do. Check the Twitter account, check the Alabama Football Podcast Twitter account. There are bonuses. There are bonus codes, or there are codes that we've given, that we've tweeted out before, that will give you a discount. At least one of them is 50% 50% off joining one of our support team groups. And so if you want to get this stuff, you want to participate in the Zooms, you want to get these calls, and you want to catch up on sort of all of this other stuff, look through my Twitter feed. There are discount codes available there. So all of that is sort of preamble to what do I think about this game. I'm probably still sorting that, but the reality is I think this Notre Dame team, especially on offense, is better than what we faced in 2011. I do not think this Notre Dame defense is better than what we saw in 2011. I do not believe that. I don't care what the experts say. If you go back and you look at the 2000 team, the number of players they had on that team to play in the NFL, the number, the ranking, the players on that roster, that was heralded as a defensive matchup. That was going to be a defensive slugfest, and it was nothing but. And it's sort of forgotten to history that that was an outstanding Notre Dame defense that Alabama just pummeled. And so there's a lot of talk about, and Brian Kelly's, you know, playing this as well, and of course he's going to, that this Notre Dame team is better than the 2011 Notre Dame team. I'll give it to you on offense. I won't give it to you on defense. And I feel very strongly about that. Matchups, we talked about styles. It cuts both ways. And Florida was a style that we struggled with. Notre Dame, well, they have a style that they're going to struggle with. This, you know, the matchups hurt us against Florida. I think it helps us against Notre Dame. People will ask. There will be headlines. There will be Twitters. There will be all sorts of Facebook. There will be memes. There will be everything that asks the question, where was this defense against Florida? Why did this defense not show up against Florida? And the answer is going to be, it was there. It was just a tougher matchup. And maybe we clean up some mistakes. But that's almost my prediction, is that this Alabama team is going to look very good against Notre Dame. The defense is going to look, I think, very good against this Notre Dame team. And it's going to beg the question people will ask, why? And what we think we've done today is sort of lay out a platter of explanation. And so we'll see how the game unfolds, and we'll revisit and open all feedback on that. I'm going to go a little nostalgia a little bit in terms of sort of a game prediction. And over the next couple of weeks, I have the right to sort of reframe my prediction. But as we're sitting here now on the podcast, I'm going to go a little nostalgia on you. And I'm going to predict a 42-14 style game. So there we have it. A lot of content. Hopefully a lot of fun. Hopefully you've enjoyed it. Go to iTunes. Leave us a comment. Leave us a ranking. That certainly helps us, helps other people find us. If you want to engage with us directly, I can't express how much we love that. That's not just bluster. If you have any doubt that we enjoy engagement, then drop us an email, alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com. If you have any doubt, then join one of our Zoom calls, because those are phenomenal. Drop us an email, hit us up on Twitter. We try to respond to everything. So far, we've got a really good track record of doing that. There's more of you than there are of me, but give us a shot, and we'll engage with anyone who is reasonable and reaching out to us. With that, let me transition, hard transition. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Whatever you celebrate, celebrate the bottom out of it. Celebrate it very well. This year has been trying in a lot of different ways. And I hope that everyone is able to take some time off work. Enjoy, not that we haven't spent enough time with our family, but enjoy our family sort of in a holiday context. Enjoy some R&R, smoke a cigar, have a drink, whatever it is that you do to sort of unwind and sort of find your center. Do it and enjoy it. And we hope that everyone has, again, just a phenomenal holiday season and New Year's. And our wishes, our well wishes go out to everyone hearing this. So with that, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Say it with me. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach? Of course, Roll Tide.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.